Welcome to the CMR Podcast, a podcast by the Center for Migration Law.
Migration is a phenomenon of all times and always a topical issue. In this podcast, we discuss migration in the broad sense. Migration law determines who can access the territory of a country, which rights migrants have, integration, as well as equal treatment and citizenship. Migration law and policymaking takes place at the international, European, regional, national, and sometimes even local level. Our research aims to contribute to science-based policymaking from this multi-level, holistic perspective. Researchers of the Dutch Center for Migration Law of the Radboud University in Nijmegen have been investigating migration law from an interdisciplinary angle for a good 3 decades. In this podcast, we provide behind-the-scenes insights of our research projects and the involvement of researchers in policymaking. One of our current projects is the Horizon Europe-funded project Global Strategy for Skills, Migration, and Development, in short, GS4S. In this project, 14 partners from 10 countries seek to better understand global skills shortages in the digital, care, and construction sectors, and to foster skills development through innovative analyses. The project proposes multi-level, evidence-based policies on labor migration governance and alternative ways to address these shortages in 6 regions: the EU, the EEA, Western Balkan, Middle East, and North Africa, West Africa, and South and Southeast Asia. In a sub-series of 6 podcasts, we will present some of the results of this project. More information on the project is in the show notes. Hi everyone, Colleen Boland here. I'm a postdoc researcher at Radboud Center for Migration Law working on the GS4S project and a researcher with RONOMI, the Radboud University Network on Migrant Inclusion. My co-host from the first GS4S podcast will again be joining me for the 2nd episode in the series, Ksenia Ivanovic, junior researcher at the Department of Geography, Spatial Planning and Environment of Radboud.
Hi, Colleen. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Ksenia. Thanks for being here. And we'd also like to welcome our guest online from Torino in Italy, Professor Tommaso Frattini. Hi, Tommaso.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Tommaso is a labor economist specializing in economics of migration at the Centro Studi Luca de Agliano, one of the partner organizations at GS4S. He coordinates the migration research area there. He's also professor of economics at the University of Milan and is also co-director of the Global Migration Information Hub at Rockwool Foundation Berlin. He's a research fellow at CEPR, Dondena, and Institute of Labor Economics in Berlin. His research on these topics have appeared in journals such as the Review of Economic Studies, the Journal of the European Economic Association, the Economic Journal, and others. Of course, we're very happy to have him with us on the GS4S project too. Tommaso, could you briefly tell us about your work with the GS4S project?
Sure. So first of all, thanks again for having me here. What we set out to do in the GS4S project was to map the extent of skill mismatch and especially over-education of immigrants throughout European countries and over time. So we were interested in understanding the extent to which immigrants in Europe are well matched or not matched to the, in terms of skills, to the jobs that they perform. We believe this is an interesting question and in fact a crucial question in the face of the importance that skill shortages and the specific needs of European firms to fill some types of occupations have, and in the light of the importance that immigration is often thought to have potentially as a way of filling such skill shortages.
Okay, so I think what we wanted to ask you about in this context is your first working paper in the project, relating to the over-education of migrants in Europe, which I guess over-education is one part of a possible mismatch. But could you explain to us a little bit more for our listeners as well what over-education means in this context and maybe some examples as to how it happens or occurs?
Sure. So what we did within the project was to conduct an analysis of immigrants' over-education across a European labor market. So what we mean by over-education is the phenomenon by which workers have a higher level of education than it is required by the job they currently perform. So we define someone as over-educated if their level of education is above what's required by their job. Of course, there are different ways in which these over-education can be measured. The approach that we have adopted in our study for GS4S was to define as over-educated any worker whose level of education is above the most frequent level of education held by native workers who perform the same job in the same country in the same year and have and are in the same age range. Okay, so we define both natives and immigrants as overeducated if their current level of education is above the modal in their occupation.
Okay, I think that's a helpful description to get our minds around it. Well, we were discussing with Madi on the last podcast. Ksenia and I are both migrants, which is fun addition to this
talk.
To this, yeah. But we don't think that we're necessarily overeducated. But we have been seeing in research and other work packages, including upskilling and reskilling, that in the Netherlands, overeducation might be kind of disproportionately higher for some groups, migrant groups and refugee groups in the Dutch context, as I said. So we were wondering if when you were going through the results, if any countries stuck out to you or any descriptive reasons or factors came up in seeing levels of over-education of migrants or refugees or other groups, legal categories.
Sure. So one thing that I'd like to stress beforehand is that over-education is not something that affects migrants only. Okay. In fact, based on our definition of over-education in 2022, the latest year we have examined in our study, 21% of natives across Europe were over-educated and 34% of immigrants were over-educated.
Okay.
So this is something that affects a significant proportion of workers across Europe. What we care mostly about, however, is not the level of over-education, which makes faster also measurement issues, but the differential in over-education between immigrants and natives.
Okay.
So as I said, although about one-fifth of natives are defined as over-educated, the proportion among immigrants is about one-third.
Okay.
And that is also holds true when you compare immigrants and natives in the same country, in the same year, in the same age group. So who is more likely to be over-educated? I guess that was essentially your question. Where there are one big difference is in terms of immigrant groups, one big difference is between EU migrants and non-EU migrants. So migrants who are originally from countries outside of the European Union are more likely to be over-educated than migrants who are from another EU country.
So third country nationals.
Exactly.
Like Kassanian.
Then third country nationals.
Okay.
And in terms of host countries, instead, there are, of course, differences, but it is remarkable that the levels of over-education by years since migration are very similar across all EU countries. Mm. So the differences in the average over-education of immigrants living in different EU countries is, to a large extent, driven by differences in the average time spent by immigrants in different EU countries. So countries okay. that have an immigrant population that spent longer time in that country, whereas other countries have a more recent immigrant population. So these partly drive differences in the levels of over-education. By the way, it may take this opportunity to to advertise the fact that we have also set up an interactive dashboard that's available on the GS4S website, where you can actually look up yourself differences in over-education differential between immigrants and natives across different EU countries and over time.
Yeah, that's cool, because you can like dig into your country of interest and pull it up more easily and not have to sort through a whole working paper with maybe a economics approach.
Yeah, I think the first two podcast episodes are really about like economics oriented research on our project.
Hardcore.
Yeah, but I think I would just like to support Tomas in this and say the dashboard is amazing. I played around with it quite a lot, already sent it to a lot of my friends and colleagues.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up as like a practical tool. Speaking of practical tools, we were also thinking about when we were going through your working paper, you also spoke about solutions for kind of improving this over-education issue or mismatching, and one of them was recognizing foreign qualifications, developing more efficient pathways for skill validation, tailoring, reskilling, and upskilling initiatives. And this is something that we've been finding in other work packages, but something that also has been repeated in research and policy for many years now, I guess, and it just seems something to be hard to achieve. So when you spoke about evaluating current programs in order to more concretely achieve these kind of aims, I thought that was like a really good point and how to go forward and just not keep repeating the same old, we should do this, but actually go about towards improving. So I was wondering, in these like policy evaluations, probably there's a way to do it that would come up with data that you could do more research with, I guess. So I was wondering, like, what kind of data should these evaluations collect when they're looking at improving over education or recognition of foreign qualifications, for example?
Yeah, that's a crucial issue. The crucial issue here is, I mean, there's of course a crucial issue, which is recognition of foreign qualifications and improvement of skill job match for immigrants and for natives in European labor markets. But now I was referring more to the other part of your question. So the crucial issue here is what data we would ideally need to better measure and assess the extent of over-education of immigrants in European labor market. And what I think would be ideal is to have longitudinal data on immigrants in Europe. So our data here, the data that we use for our analysis are what we call cross-sectional data. So this is like a picture of a representative sample of the population of one country in a given year. And we have several pictures that have been taken for 11 years, and we use them. But by looking at these, we are not able to track the same individuals over time. So what we observe is not how each individual person, migrant or native, evolves over their time in the labor market, but rather how individuals who have spent a different amount of time in the country labor market perform. this might seem like a small difference, but in fact it's not. And access to longitudinal data may allow us better investigating some frankly puzzling and concerning results that come out of our study, and specifically the fact that, unlike most people would presumably imagine, over-education of immigrants does not tend to diminish with time spent in the host country, which is what you would normally expect, because it makes sense to imagine that upon arrival in host country, even tertiary educated migrants, who, by the way, are the group that we focus on in our study, mm-hmm. even tertiary educated migrants may not be perfectly fluent in host country language, to give a very simple example, but then over time they may acquire a better command of the language and thus integrate better and find better jobs. What we observe in the data instead is that the over-education of migrants relative to natives tend to increase with time spent in the host country until 10 to 20 years in the host country, and only after that it starts declining. So having access to longitudinal data that allow us to follow the same individuals over time would allow us to ascertain whether this is something that happens in the individual level, or whether this peculiar inverse U-shape in immigrants over education profiles arises instead from a selection, differences in the selection of immigrants that entered labor market after several years since migration.
Or like some, like due to structural issues, basically, versus individual characteristics, or?
Yeah, so basically what might happen is that immigrants who find a job in the first year after arriving in host country are those who have characteristics that make them more likely to also be better matched to jobs than those who find employment only after 2, 3, or 4 years in the host country.
Yeah, I think, Tommaso, actually everything you just said really points out to one possible recommendation that could come out as a result of our project and your research in it. And that brings me really to an important question for us as a project. You know, we always try to think about what are the public policy implications of our research and everything that we do. And, you know, we discuss working papers. We also discuss the policy brief that we had as part of the project. So I guess my question to you is, what are the policy implications of this working paper?
So the policy implications working paper are, broadly speaking, that we should be wary of overemphasizing the importance of attracting highly educated immigrants in European labor market, because by and large, we already have a pretty educated immigrant workforce.
Like they're already here.
They're already here, right? So basically, more than one third of immigrants who live in Europe today have a tertiary education. Okay, so this is not too far from the level of tertiary education of native Europeans. There is variation within countries, between countries. So different European countries have different, immigrants in different European countries have different levels of education, and but so have natives. And typically, indeed, the most highly educated the native population is, the most highly educated the immigrant population is too. So highly educated immigrants tend to go to countries with highly educated natives. Coming back to my original point, we do have already, as I was saying, a pretty high share of tertiary educated migrants. The real challenge is how to actually put this education at productive use. So rather than focusing on attracting more highly educated migrants and then wasting their human capital in occupations that do not require such high levels of education, we should rather focus on the question of how to put the human capital of migrants who are already here in productive use, how to facilitate a better match between the skills and education that migrants possess and the jobs that they perform.
Yeah, I would definitely like to add, I think that's very, very important. And we've already seen examples of these issues in GS4S work in other tasks. We recently conducted a case study of Estonia, just to give an example, I guess, where there is a large shortage of workers in the care sector, and also a large presence of migrants who have the necessary qualifications in their home countries, but these are simply not recognized. And there is also the issue of language level that we discussed before. So this would be maybe like a sort of facilitating these procedures would, in that sense, help match workers that are already in the European Union with the jobs, right?
That's right. So facilitating the recognition of foreign qualifications is certainly an obvious policy implication that follows from our study and from the whole amount of evidence that we have. So facilitating recognition of foreign qualifications, improving, finding ways of improving language fluency, and I would say not to always overemphasize the importance of entering the labor market too early. There are good reasons why we may want to leave migrants, and especially I'm talking about forced migrants here, who arrive in a more unexpected way to want in European labor market. They may need some time to acquire a minimum set of skills in order to be able to transfer their home country human capital to the new country that is hosting them. And these will have, even though this slows down their labor market integration at first, these may actually end up in better integration in the long run, because they can, again, be better matched to jobs upon arrival rather than entering the labor market in lower pay and lower skilled occupations, where they're then trapped and end up staying there for their whole migration history, even though they could, in principle, if they were best matched initially, aspire to more highly qualified jobs.
So I guess there, like, the important thing would be public programs or public-private partnerships that supported these forced migrants and their studies or a work study before having jump in the labor market.
This might be a solution. So I guess any program that facilitates the transfer of skills from home to host country, or facilitate the acquisition of a new country-specific skills that individuals may lack upon arrival, has the potential to be successful. Of course, future research would be it would be very interesting to understand which features of integration programs are essential for these programs to be successful and which are instead less important.
Yeah, that's actually pretty neat that you mentioned that, because I think in the reskilling and upskilling research line that we're doing, we're already kind of asking that to expert stakeholders, and then we're going to hold some focus groups with migrants and refugees themselves that should hopefully at least provide some qualitative evidence or descriptive information in that regard. I think, Tomasa, this has been a super insightful episode, and that we can kind of wrap it up here. More information about Tomasa's work can be found in the show notes of this episode. I think it's also worth mentioning that it's our last episode this year, but we'll be back in 2025 with more to come. And you can keep up with our project on the project website, of course, at gs4s.eu. But yeah, just want to say thanks again to my co-host and our guest.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you both.